thanks for coming back each month to listen to Makeshift Stories. You can help us out by writing a review on your favorite podcast service, such as Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio.
Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
In his book, The Righteous Mind, Jonathan Hyde quotes David Hume as writing in 1739 that reason is and ought only to be the slave of passions, and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them. An interesting thought. Are the emotions the basis of everything we do? And if so, when we want to believe, do we simply ignore the information that does not agree with our view? In this month's story, Tanvi, an agent from a group called the Consensus, arrives at her destination only to discover that their opposition is already there. With the fate of two worlds hanging in the balance, she is forced to improvise. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 122, The Rift, Part 2. Somewhere in some time, believing might be all that it takes.
Tanvi tensed, waiting for the pain of the Bodhisikrata, the hidden technique of a master ephemeral agent, reminding herself that the attack would only be as real as she would let it become. The knot that had grown in her stomach kept insisting this body was hers, and this its reality. But her mind, fighting the lure of the physical, refused to give in. The sliver of doubt that lurked behind her thoughts was her critical weakness. If it grew, she would be in danger. She reminded herself that reality, as all her kind knew, as they had all been taught to believe, was a consensual illusion. As long as she agreed to participate in it, that would be her world, and as long as she didn't become too engaged, it would only be temporary. An illusion can't hurt you, she reminded herself. Besides, if need be, she could transit to the infinite whenever she chose. Moving the other direction was the problem, and that could only happen through a rift. She and her kind, with the exception of the dissenters, preferred to remain transient thoughts existing between physical realities, moving around them, watching them from the outside, like dreams encased in bubbles. Ultimately, reality was a trap. To be in a bubble was so limiting, you became fixed to a single frame of reference. However, the dissenters, the Lemurians, no longer satisfied to watch from the outside, craved the physical. They became so obsessed that they ignored the downside. But the cost for those in the reality they would attach themselves to was high. All its billions would be forcibly displaced to the non-physical. These thoughts ran through Tanvi's mind in an instant. The hunger, the desire for the experience the dissenters coveted, had taken root in her as well, had started to drive her insane, and fed a growing desire to want to stay. At the same time, the fear of being confined to a single plane made her want to disengage and evaporate back to the in-between. But there was the mission. If she failed, billions would be displaced, leaving the ether and the physical in turmoil. She parried and prepared. Brooklyn's hand came out of her bag, holding a buzzing cell phone. Her dark eyes lingered for a moment, burning into Tanvi. The Lemurian's mind leapt out, tendrils of thought, probing, looking for a way in. Then suddenly distracted by the phone, her mind withdrew. Tanvi stood for a second, stunned. Then by instinct brushed her hand against the back of Brooklyn's arm as the agent turned to walk away. A few imperceptible molecules of sweat had transferred, but that was enough. Once they were absorbed by Brooklyn's exposed skin, their altered genes began to emit a quantum signal. With relief, she hurried off in the opposite direction, trying to get lost in the afternoon crowd, before the distant agent turned around and saw her again. It had been close, Another fraction of a second, and she was sure the agent would have known. Her heart was pounding, body trembling with adrenaline. Tanvi left the market, both excited and scared. She didn't want to admit it, but she had enjoyed the physical response to danger. It had taken 30 minutes to walk from Byward Market to her apartment in Lower Town, an overpriced room in Coghlan Street, in a rundown mid-last century prefab building, recently surrounded by skyscraping glass and metal condos. Despite its condition, she understood she was lucky to find an affordable place this close to city center. Tanvi, adrenaline now long gone, dragged herself up the worn stairs to the fifth floor, through the musty hall to her rooms. Heat from the apartment flooded into the hallway when she opened the door. More experiences, more physical reactions. It was overwhelming. How did the sentience here ever deal with this, she wondered. Tanvi closed her door and dropped onto the closest chair, tired. Her body was tired, and it was making her mind fuzzy, her thoughts slow. She never considered how the mind and body would be so connected. It was something no one had warned her about. A new word crept into her consciousness. Coffee. She let her body go on autopilot as it boiled water, then ground beans, and combined them into a steaming brew, which it poured into a cup and slowly drank. A few minutes later, her mind was sharper, and she felt that a tentative equilibrium had been reached between the constant pull of gravity and the strain of her muscles. She moved over to the balcony window and looked out, listening to the angry traffic below, then stilled her mind so she could sense the tickle of the trackers she had placed on Brooklyn. She found them and focused on their song. The Lemurian was sitting at a desk in front of a laptop in a house on the opposite side of the city. Her home was cool, large, and quiet. The agent was typing a post for her blog. It had nothing to do with Wayne or the event. Disappointed, Tanvi stood at the balcony, eyes not seeing the scene in front of her, patiently waiting for the agent to reveal her next move. Wayne sat waiting on a park bench, dedicated to some long-dead person whose name he could barely make out on a small, corroded metal plaque. The noon-hour lunch crowd was starting to recede into the adjacent office buildings. He had picked this location because it was public, providing an easy escape if the meeting turned ugly. Up to now, Wayne's experience with anyone from the mainstream media had been adversarial. His words twisted to ridicule his work and everyone else who believed in it. This person seemed somehow different, more open or something. Meeting her was a risk. But with Brooklyn setting up the live event and actively promoting it, his story would not become buried and the truth about his father's death would come out regardless of what this person did or thought. A short woman with black hair, dressed in jeans, topped by an orange blouse under a dark blazer, approached. She was casual but businesslike in her manner.
Wayne?
She inquired.
Yes. It's Tanvi, right?
Wayne queried, then offered his hand. She stared at it, and left it hanging there in the air for a moment, as if she didn't know what to do. Then hesitantly shook before quickly withdrawing her hand.
thanks for coming. I don't normally bother with the mainstream, but please sit down. Let's talk.
The woman sat and turned towards him.
Thanks for meeting with me. I think. Hey, I just read that you've set up a live event with that alternative news blogger. Are you sure you want to do that? Excuse me if I'm being a bit forward, but I did some research around your father's death, and I believe there's something there. That's why I'm here.
I see.
Wayne was taken aback. This was not what he had expected.
I don't want to criticize, but by allowing the alternative press to take over your story, I'm not sure if that's going to help you solve the mystery. It'll just cloud the facts. You'll never get to the bottom of this.
Tanvi looked into his eyes, searching.
I already know the truth,
Wayne protested, staring back, challenging her.
And if you're just here to debunk my story, you can leave now.
Wayne, that's not what I meant. Pushing this out through the alternative news channel isn't going to help you. In fact, it'll do the opposite. There's something here. I believe that. And I want to work with you to prove it, but...
But you think I'm just some kind of pseudoscience geek that won't listen to reason, don't you?
Not at all. Something really unusual happened to your father. It's a matter of public record, and a fantastic place to start. We could create an investigative series based on that. Have interviews with respected experts, focus on the mystery. People would buy into the process of discovering the truth. But you'd have to back away from your own conclusions and let the investigation go where it needs to. Would you be willing to do that, Wayne?
Wayne had to think for a moment. Okay, she hadn't outright rejected this story. It was a different twist, but he was still suspicious.
And what if they...
come to a different conclusion?
Tanvi completed his sentence.
What if the mist turns out just to be that? A mist? A freak of local weather conditions? Wayne, you can't jump to a conclusion without verifiable and repeatable proof. As I said, something really did happen to your father. Let's discover what that was together and make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else.
Wayne felt himself tense up. Her attitude was, well, what, mainstream? Again, he reminded himself that she hadn't outright rejected the entire story. He watched her analytically. It was subtle, but there was something off about her. She was trying to be inconspicuous, but he noticed her sniffing at the air. The park was filled with a mixture of late-season flowers and shawarma from a nearby food truck. For a brief moment, she seemed to be more interested in the smells than talking to him. He interrupted, trying to pull her back into the conversation.
There's always a but, isn't there? My guess is your so-called experts will come up with some really banal explanation that basically contradicts everything I've done.
That is the risk,
she agreed.
However, whatever the truth is, your idea or something else, we can stop this from happening again. But you'll have to throw the dice on this one, Wayne. And even if the truth that comes out is different than your explanation, it will still vindicate your father.
Tanvi leaned over and lightly touched Wayne's arm.
That's what you really want, isn't it? I know you can do this, Wayne. It's the best way to ensure your father's legacy.
Wayne thought he felt his skin tingle where the woman's fingers had been. He wondered if he was making the right choice.
Her offer did have merit, but he couldn't trust the mainstream not to make fun of his story, to bury the truth.
Maybe he was just hearing what he wanted. Was she playing with him? Was Brooklyn playing with him as well? Were they two sides of the same coin? In that case, what were they really after? Wayne suddenly got up.
Thanks. I'll think about it, he said.
Don't wait too long,
Tanvi called after him.
You'll need to decide before the event. After that, you'll never be taken seriously.
Enough are going to believe to make a difference.
Wayne called back defiantly over his shoulder, but as he walked away, his resolve softened. He stopped and looked back at the woman. Her head was tilted back now, eyes closed, smiling. She was sunning herself, he realized. She was oblivious to him staring. Wayne had almost changed his mind. Maybe she was right. He should let someone else go through his research. But watching her there, absorbing the midday sun like a plant, Well, it just creeped him out. He turned and left, but Tanvi had managed to plant the seeds of doubt. Something had been bothering Brooklyn for the last few days. She couldn't quite figure out what it was. Maybe the consensus had finally arrived. There was that moment in the market where she had thought there was another presence. But it was just a feeling that left as quickly as it had come. And she was finding that it was hard to concentrate. The physical was constantly distracting. Smells, sounds, images, body aches, hunger, pleasure, desire, and more. A motherload of experience that Brooklyn needed to temporarily push aside if she was going to succeed, if she was ever going to be able to help the Lemurian faction achieve their collective dream of inhabiting the physical realm. A notification window popped up in the lower corner of her workstation screen. She was about to dismiss it when she noticed it was from Wayne. "Call me," he requested. She picked up her phone and touched his number. It took a few moments for Wayne to pick up.
"Who is it?"
he asked suspiciously.
"Wayne, you wanted to talk."
"Brooklyn, yes. Thanks for calling. I met with that researcher yesterday. She almost had me convinced, but she's weird, and that really unnerved me."
"What do you mean?"
"She tried to convince me that it would be better to let mainstream experts research my father's death than let them come to their own conclusions. She claimed it would make my story more believable, and for a while it made sense. But her behavior threw me. You know, she was sunning herself like a cold-blooded animal. Have you ever heard about the lizard people? If there was ever a candidate for one, she'd be it."
"No? I'll have to look them up. I'm glad you saw through her, Wayne. So this researcher was acting strange, was she? Maybe a bit like she had been locked away someplace for years?"
"Yeah, that's it," Wayne agreed. "Like she had never felt the warmth of the sun before."
"Don't contact her again,"
Brooklyn demanded.
"Okay, don't get so concerned about it. I wasn't planning to anyway. I'll connect with you soon about the details of the live stream. Remember, stay away from that woman."
Brooklyn disconnected.
She knew what this researcher was. It was the thing that had been bothering her, the ill-defined presence she had stumbled on in the market.
"So they're finally here,"
she muttered to herself.
Brooklyn had hoped to be finished before one of them came. So they had contacted the trigger. Not good. But now that she knew, she could take the appropriate precautions. The upside was, Wayne didn't trust their agent. Brooklyn calmed herself by walking through the logic again. She had over 500,000 followers on social media. If 100,000 of them watched the stream, and only 1% believed, that would be 1,000 minds concentrating, making the rift real. It would be more than enough, and there would be nothing the consensus agent could do.
Tanvi kept to the speed limit. There was no need to be in a rush. The trackers she had placed on both Brooklyn and Wayne were marking their position on the road a few kilometers ahead, and fortune appeared to have played in her favor. There was only one cell tower within range. That would mean that as long as she was close enough, the jammer she had bought on the darknet would have no trouble blocking their cell signals. In her mind, she saw them turn off the highway and onto a range road, drive another kilometer, then stop. Tanvi pulled off onto the shoulder and walked the last click so her quarry would not hear her arrival. She followed her path into the woods over scrub-covered Precambrian rocks. It was a hot, late summer day, and the heat reflected back off the ground, making her sweat. As she walked, the pungent aroma of spruce and juniper and the sensation of sweat evaporating off her skin combined to make a most distracting diversion. She stopped to luxuriate in her senses, and time seemed to drop away before she realized that she had been standing exposed for 5 minutes. Tanvi snapped back and sought out the signals again. Brooklyn and Wayne had stopped on the other side of a small ridge ahead. Keeping to a band of exposed rock, she silently made her way to the top, then crouched down behind a boulder and watched. To one side of a shallow 10-meter-wide depression, Wayne and Brooklyn were busy setting up equipment. Tanvi was impressed. Wayne had called it perfectly. It was the ideal location for a natural, temporary rift to form. She anxiously fingered the jammer in her pocket as she watched them finish setting up. Despite the heat of the mid-afternoon, a thin mist was already beginning to condense in the center of the depression. Wayne turned away from the camera he was working on, then motioned to Brooklyn to look. The Lemurian saw the mist, then began to work faster. Wayne started up a small power generator, flicked switches, checked displays, then nodded to Brooklyn. At the same time, Tanvi switched on the jammer, but the device protested. She pulled it out and read the small built-in screen.
Too far from target, it claimed in blinking red letters. She looked down the slope. There was no cover between the boulder and the bottom. She had no choice. Tambi stood up and began to casually walk toward them.
"Hi there,"
she waved.
"It was a pain following you here. I lost you a couple of times. I hope you don't mind, but I just had to witness this in person. Who is your friend, Wayne?"
Brooklyn looked up, eyes burning into Tambi.
"You!"
she yelled.
"How did you?"
Then paused and fingered her arm where Tambi had brushed against her in the market and cursed.
"Wayne, did she touch you?"
Maybe. I don't really remember,"
Wayne hesitantly replied.
"Why?"
"That's how she found us. Molecule-sized trackers."
Wayne instinctively brushed his arms off, then backed away.
"Who are you people? You're obviously not journalists. She's here to stop us, Wayne. Her kind don't want this to happen. They don't want people to believe. They want to close the door forever."
"It's the mist, isn't it? It's a passage. But why did it kill my father?"
"We need to fully open it, Wayne. That's what happened to your father. It wasn't completely open."
Brooklyn nodded at the growing mist.
"And to do that, we just need enough people to believe it exists."
Wayne looked confused.
"You're not making a lot of sense, Brooklyn. It does exist, and it's dangerous. We need to warn people."
Brooklyn ignored him.
"You can't stop us,"
she yelled at Tanvi. The mist, defying the light wind, had grown into a neat dome. Brooklyn noticed and glanced over to Wayne.
"Start the video stream, Wayne."
But he refused to move. Tanvi could feel the rift open as she continued to close the distance to Wayne and Brooklyn.
"Wayne,"
she tried to get his attention.
"Has your friend told you what she is really up to here? She doesn't care about your story. She's not interested in letting the world know the truth about your father. This is about her and her kind. She's using you to open something you don't understand. They want to come through, Wayne. They want your world."
Wayne glared at Brooklyn, who had stopped partway up the ridge, blocking Tanvi's progress.
"Start the video stream, Wayne,"
Brooklyn barked.
"I'll keep her away. She's just trying to confuse you. She wants to sweep this all under the carpet. Don't you want the world to know the truth? Don't you want your father vindicated?"
"Who are you?"
Wayne demanded.
"Both of you."
The Lemurian suddenly pushed out with its mind, driving painfully into Tambi's consciousness, making her stumble. She couldn't move any closer. Her jammer complained again. Remembering it, she pulled the device out of her pocket and tossed it toward the mist. Lights on its tiny screen finally turning green as it landed. Brooklyn dropped her attack as she watched it roll to a stop.
"It's a jammer,"
she yelled in desperation.
"Grab it, Wayne, or no one's going to see this."
She turned and jumped for the device. Tambi sprinted to beat her. They were both off balance as they struggled to grab the jammer, which made it easy for Wayne to push them both into the mist. The rift snapped shut with an audible pop. Then the oily yellow fog suddenly lifted, leaving absolutely nothing. It was as if it had never been there. Wayne stood for a second, stunned by both his impulsive action and the result. But he finally understood, and that was enough. He decided that it might be best if no one else knew.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 122, The Rift, Part 2. We hope that you have enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio, or check us out on Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written and read by Ellen V. Hare. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. And don't forget to listen to our other story, Ceres, which is posted at the beginning of each month. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.